Welcome to Minute 63 of The Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into The Great Escape one minute at a time. I'm Tom.
And I'm Rob.
And joining us again today is Richard Kirkham from Kirkham, A Movie A Day, and he's also the host of The Lambcast. How are you doing today, Richard?
I'm doing great. Hey, everybody. Glad to be back again for another day watching The Great Escape one minute at a time.
Well, we're glad you could join us again today. 63 starts with Colin whistling, and it ends with him saying, "The voice is a monotonous succession of scratchy, complaining notes." This minute, by and large, is a lesson on birds. specifically, the mass shrike. I did a cursory look, and everything Colin says about the mass shrike looks to hold true. I didn't do a lot of research on the bird, mostly because I heard shrike and I immediately thought of the Minnesota shrike from the Hannibal series. And that, yes, I know. It's also because I'm from Minnesota. So every time Minnesota can get a pop culture reference, I'm on board. So we get, an insight into how they're lulling the guards into thinking they're being good, well-behaved prisoners and not planning anything nefarious whatsoever. And, this also ties back into when we met Colin and, we established that he's the bird watcher. And so I thought that it's an interesting way to tying all of those things together.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the whole, first of all, he's able to sketch a bird really well, especially if it's from memory, unless it's one of the books they have in the library. I mean, Richard, we discussed this a few times that they, whenever they show them in the library, there's a whole slew of them on the wall. We were trying to figure out what type of books are there besides, like, numerous copies of Mein Kampf.
it appears that there was a bird watching book, at least.
Apparently, because, they've also established that they're able to get colored chalk. They're willing to let they get a chalkboard, they get chalk, they can give lectures on birds.
Well, one of the things that I noticed on this, and this is the first time I've seen this movie dozens of times, and, one of the advantages of looking at it minute by minute is it forces you to think about things that you might not have considered otherwise. The amount of documents that they would have had to produce in order for all of those prisoners to be able to have something to show, if necessary, would be overwhelming. How could they all do that? And certainly, Colin can do that all by himself, especially given his vision problems. And it's right there in front of us. Everybody in that class has drawing material that they can use. Everybody in that class is ultimately going to be part of the production of these falsified documents. And the fact that they have these drawing materials for the purpose of making pictures of birds is, an interesting side note, but it's really the subterfuge to being able to do mass produce large numbers of fake documents. And I just thought, I had never thought about that before, and I thought about it only after seeing this scene.
Right. Okay. So the book obviously discusses this in more detail. They say that the forging was actually one of the slowest businesses that they had to deal with at the time, because one of the problems with forging, if you're creating a document and you make one little mistake, that's it. You got to start from scratch. It makes it a lot more difficult to do. They say that, sometimes someone will be working on a document for days, and you do one careless little thing and that's it. You've lost all of those days of work. So they mention in the book that basically some of the documents would take some of these forgers who were quite skilled. They would work 5 hours a day, every day. It would take them an entire month to create one document, which is astounding, that the amount of detail that they would need for all these things. They said they had 50 forgers plus the stooges who were all working 3 to 5 hours a day for an entire year. They were actually able to also get stamps They were able to create Nazi stamps with swastikas and titles and signatures that they used for all their documents and stuff like that. And so they basically think here that they were made something like, I think, 400 documents.
You're planning well, look,
we're looking at the factory floor right here in this scene.
Exactly. Right. Now, I have noticed this before. You know, for me, it was, you know, you see that they all have teams of you know, doing all their work. I mean, we saw it with Sedgwick, you know, where he has his whole team of manufacturers. And obviously, you see the stoolies, you know, how they all, you know, how there are many of them. Griffith also has a whole group of people. We'll probably discuss that later this week. You know, helping him create all of the clothes that he did. So, I mean, there were a lot of people working in each of these groups within the X organization to try to get everything taken care of. I just find it completely nuts that they were able to create 400 different documents for the 250 prisoners that were getting out.
Now, in the book, did it say... And this would also, and not entirely sure this would work on all documents, but were they able to use any sort of process similar to like check washing in forging documents where they were able to, you know, at least have the generic documents and wash them and then insert their own information in it? Or was it everything 100% from scratch?
I think it was pretty much from scratch. I don't think they go into detail about that. No, so I can't answer that. I'm not knowledgeable enough to be able to give you an answer on that one. But based on what I read, they did each of them from scratch. Now, I mean, I actually this is the first time that I noticed, because I was paying attention to what Colin was saying about the mass strike, and it really sounds as if he's alluding to the Germans. Did you guys think about what he was saying?
Well, I think they picked the bird just so they could get that last line of the minute in about it.
But it's not just that last line. Think about all of the lines that he says about the mass strikes. First of all, it's called the butcher bird. Okay, that's the nickname.
That doesn't sound like just a mere coincidence.
No, of course not. I mean, I don't know Latin well enough to tell you what Lanius Nubicus means. Do either of you know any Latin? Besides it saying that it's the mass strike, you know? Or maybe Lanius Nubicus means the butcher bird. That I don't know. But they say the strike impales his foes on the spikes of thorn bushes, okay? And he goes, not a very lovable character. And he says, you can look at their coloring. Okay. Did you listen to what they said about the coloring? That it's completely black from head to toe. Okay. They have a black rump, a black crown. There's a bold white flash. I don't really know what that means. Maybe they're talking about the breast is white. Maybe. I don't know. And a white line over the eye. And then they say that it usually lives in lightly wooded country. Again, they're in a POW camp in a lightly wooded area. Okay. And then he gets interrupted.
The Zappo uniform.
Exactly. Yeah. That's my point here.
No, it is definitely.
And then he continues and says that he once again states that they live in the lightly wooded country, olive groves or gardens. You know, we discussed, I think it was last week, the gardening that they were doing. Or maybe it was 2 weeks ago. And then he has then he talks about the voice is a monotonous succession of scratchy complaining notes. And he says this right after Frick, you know, leaves the room. So I think that this is all purposely put in there to make it. Again, I'm not an expert on birds, so I can't really tell you, but it really sounds as if he's using that information here to describe the German captors.
You didn't do it deliberately. You've just created a very good college paper for your English class.
That's true. That's true. And it's funny the conversation between Frick and Henley. I mean, again, they've already established that these characters have been in the camp for a little bit of time. You know, maybe it's been 2 weeks, maybe it's been a month. You know, it's gotten to be enough time that the guards know where people are, you know, what barracks they're supposed to be in. They know some of them by names. I mean, Frick actually calls Henley Henley. He says to him, you know, what was the line that he says? I didn't think you'd enjoy birds. Something like that. What's the line specifically? Well, Henley, have you taken to birds too now? You know. And his answer is, stick around, you might learn something. Which is a great line, because if he really would stick around, he would learn a lot. You know, that's the way you learn how we're forging documents. Just stick around.
So I have a translation update for you. Nubicus does translate from Latin as mast. Mast.
Okay.
So that's good. And then bonus. Yeah, possible translations is butcher, executioner, meat man, or shrike. So,
well, actually, what does shrike mean? Does shrike mean?
I translated the Latin.
No, I understand that. No, my point is that it's called a mass shrike, which is sometimes called a butcher bird. But those are both those words are used as you translate the Latin. So my question then is, you know, does shrike mean butcher? That's my question here. No, I appreciate that you took the time to find the translation. I'm not belittling you at all with that.
So, Webster, any of numerous, usually, I mean, it's just talking about the family of birds. First known usage is in 1544, in the meaning defined above, which is the birds. So it might be one of those quasi-Latin things that they just made up when they were putting animals into, or putting living beings into the pyramids that I can't remember the biology name of right now.
Right. Well,
is that Lannis is derived from the Latin word for butcher. So, you know, there is a pretty direct line there to calling it the butcher bird.
Right. I mean, I also found here that it says that not only do they impale their prey on sharp thorns, they because their beaks are sharply hooked and they're raptor-like, they kill their prey that way also. So we're learning a lot about birds.
Yeah, and they are carnivorous.
Yeah, very interesting. Who would have thought that we would have a bird lesson today?
Anyone who watched this minute?
No, because again, the question is whether anybody, you know, would have noticed that. I mean, as Richard said, he's seen this movie dozens of times. I've seen this movie dozens of times. You know, this is something I never paid attention to because I was like, who the hell cares about what bird they're talking about? I didn't even think that there was any significance. And apparently there is. I guess this was just another way for them to goad the Germans along the way. I mean,
the boar one right out of the room.
Exactly. Well, again, this might go back to the fact that his English isn't that great, so he doesn't understand that they're making fun of him. You know, it's the same way that in you know, Hogan's Heroes and Stalag 17, they would make fun of Schultz, and you know, because he didn't understand English, he didn't really realize that they're making fun of him the whole time. And but Frick's line of "I have better things to do than draw birds" is great also.
Like what?
Hey, well, while you're all in here, I'll go steal some coffee from your barracks.
I'll go take a nap. Well, do either of you have anything else for this minute?
I have nothing to contribute else other than that what we've talked about.
No. But again, I think this is probably one of the most enlightening episodes that we've discussed so far because we've really delved into something that we never thought we would. So thank you guys for that.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Richard, do you want to tell everyone where they can find you?
Well, once again, I can be located at Kirkham A Movie A Day. And you can also go to the LAM website. That's the Large Association of Movie Blogs. And the podcast that I host is published there, and you can find it on all of your podcasting sources. So if you guys are interested in listening to the Lambcast, we're easy to find also.
Or even joining the Lambcast.
Yes, that would be great.
Well, we're always looking for new members for the Lamb. So if anyone wants to become a member of the Lamb, get in touch with Richard or with me. You know, we can set you up.
We steer you in the right direction.
That's right.
Get you a badge. Forward some documents.
Well, while you're out checking that out, go ahead and subscribe to our podcast on whatever podcatcher you use. Give us a 5-star review as well, even if you hate us. We promise we'll look at all the 5-star reviews. So if you tell us we suck, we'll look at it. If you give us a 1-star, I can't guarantee you we'll look at it. So
I'll look at it.
Oh, well, I'm only going to look at 5-star. So if you think I'm really bad, make sure you leave us a 5-star and I'll know about it. If you want to get in touch with us otherwise, our email address is thegreatminute@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @greatescapemxm. You can join our Facebook group, The Cooler, or you can check out our website, thegreatescapeminute.com. Until tomorrow, tally-ho.
Tally-ho.
Tally-ho.